From our nation's capital, this is Naps Chat.
I'm gonna sit right down and write myself a letter and make believe it came from you.
Hi, this is Bob Levy, the Director of Legislative and Political Affairs for the National Association of Postal Supervisors, and welcome to this week's edition of Naps Chat. Today we have John Hatton, who is the Director of Legislative and Political Affairs for the National Association of Active and Retired Federal Employees. John has been with NAR for around 10 years, and before that, John's giving me a look. It's been almost a lifetime for John.
Yeah, it's been longer than I realize sometimes, and I think about it, and it's been about 10 years.
Yeah, and before that, for a short period of time, he worked on Capitol Hill for the Senate Committee on Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs. Welcome to Naps Chat, John.
Thanks for having me, Bob.
Yeah, around a year ago, we had the Vice President for Advocacy at NARF, Jessica Clement, speak about the federal budget, particularly the President Trump's budget submission to Congress for his FY 2020 budget. Yeah. We now have the honor of talking with John Hatton about the president's submission of the fiscal year 2021 budget.
Right.
What we have here is sort of a contradiction. The president of the United States is heralding the economy as the strongest it's been in probably his lifetime, maybe in this nation's history. Yet at the same time that the economy is so strong, this budget has sort of taken a meat axe to federal and postal employees and retirees. How do you reconcile that contradiction, or is there a way to reconcile it?
I mean, it's basically because the administration is trying to find a balanced budget, and right now there's a $1 trillion gap between revenues and spending, and so they need to find cuts in spending. And one of the places where there's spending is on the benefits for federal employees and postal employees and retirees.
So after years and years, we are still the low-hanging fruit there.
We're one of a few. There's a lot of any program that has a decent amount of money has been subject to some cuts in this budget. But particularly on the retirement side, when you look at some of the types of proposals that are in here, they take hits to the current retirement benefits, such as cost of living adjustments or changing benefits up for people who are about to retire. And that's because those outlays, the spending for those, come now and in the next 10 years when they need to balance the budget and not sometime in the future if you're cutting them, for example, for new hires or something like that.
Yeah, it's funny. You know, we always use this analogy that we are the low-hanging fruit. However, with the amount of times they've looked at us to pick us, we're probably moldering on the ground by now rather than and we're still available. Let me ask you another question about this budget, about the budget submission generally. At least since I've been in Washington, and I've been in Washington a long time, every time a president submits his budget to Congress, it is considered to be, quote unquote, dead on arrival.
Right.
Probably no different than this budget. If that's the case, why are we making so much noise? Why are we so concerned about it?
Look, the budget's a statement of policy priorities from the administration. Anytime you have any administration, this is the president of the United States that was elected by the American people or through the Electoral College, as the case may be. And, you know, it's an important statement from the leader of this country that you need to take seriously. You can't just pretend that this isn't something that is a real policy proposal that has some legs if there's not opposition in Congress. So we have to make sure that there is opposition in Congress that make sure it is dead on arrival. Because as much as the overall budget is dead on arrival and some of the proposals, like the ones we're talking about, hopefully are dead on arrival, there are pieces that get picked up and that have legs and that go somewhere sometimes.
And in the past, they've used certain budget recommendations as offsets.
Right.
In legislation for other priorities that might be important to the administration.
Right. I mean, a great example is when they were discussing transportation funding a few years back. On McConnell's short list of cuts that would pay for transportation was this G-Fund proposal that's now in the president's budget. So, you know, let's looking at reducing the rate of return on the TSB's G-Fund. So that type of thing could be picked up once it's kind of in the realm of options. It could certainly be used to fill a funding gap for something else that we're not, wanting it to be filled for.
Okay, let's get down deep in the weeds now, a little bit deeper in the weeds than we've been so far. And let's talk about the specific proposals that the president has made in this fiscal year 2021 budget proposal. The first one, which is pretty significant because not only does it affect the value of retiree benefits, but it affects the take-home pay of active federal and postal employees. And that is a proposal to increase the employee contributions for the federal employees' retirement system. Can you explain a little bit about what that's about?
Yeah. I mean, and this is, you know, one that you might think of as particularly a high threat level, because in the past there have been increases in contributions for new hires. It just hasn't been applied to current employees. And so some of the newer hires in the federal government pay as much as 4.4% on top of their Social Security contributions.
Those are folks that were hired in 2013 and beyond.
Correct. I think there's a 2013 is a particular year where it's a little bit less, and then 2014 and beyond.
But that's when the increase starts taking effect is in 2013. Right. Under current rules, the folks that have been employees prior to 2013 are paying 0.8%.
Correct.
Towards FERS.
Correct.
And then it sort of goes a bit up to 4% for those hired in 2014.
Correct.
This proposal would bring it up almost to 7%.
Yeah, the proposal is 50% of the total normal cost. It's calculated every year, and so that cost has been going up a bit for a variety of actuarial factors. And so, yeah, it's 7%, maybe even 8% now. So you're talking about, you know, a 7 or 8% or at least a 7% pay cut, basically, is what it is.
And it's an increase of the contribution of sevenfold. It's a seven times increase or more in the amount that you are currently paying for federal employees' retirement system benefits without any increase in benefit. In fact, we'll talk a little bit about decrease in benefits in a couple of seconds.
Right.
But what is that? How does that devalue working in the public service for the federal government?
I mean, it certainly devalues it a lot. We're talking about, you know, just getting some pay increases. You know, this is an effective, massive pay cut for people. And so, you know, there's already some challenges in recruitment and retention of federal employees, particularly in some of the high-demand occupations. This is only going to make it worse. Could certainly push people out the door. I don't know a lot of people that would be super happy to receive a 7% pay cut, you know, even if it's, you know, spread out over 6 years.
Now, what we're talking about, just so people understand the magnitude of this, over a 10-year period, this is a reduction in pay of around $87.3 billion.
That's correct.
10-year cut. That goes postal and federal employees.
Yeah. It's really astounding, the level of it. And that's just over 10 years, like you said. If you're going to work for the government or the Postal Service for longer than that, it's going to be even more. It's going to compound over time, the amount that's going to affect for you. So it's a really big deal. I mean, if you're making $50,000 a year, 7% pay cut is, you know, $3,500 a year. So that's pretty big.
That's significant. Now let's move on, as I said, about that paying more for your retirement benefits. The administration is proposing you get less, and particularly with regard to cost of living adjustments, which is something that federal and postal retirees are extremely concerned about.
Yeah.
There are two facets to the president's proposal here. On the one hand, for federal employees' retirement system retirees, it's an outright elimination of the cost of living adjustment.
Yeah. I mean, that means basically whatever your pension is today, and the FERS pensions are a lot lower than the CSRS pensions because it's, you know, when they went to FERS, you also get the TSP as well. You know, you're never going to see an increase. And inflation is real. And over time, it really degrades the value of that pension. You know, as much as we ran some numbers, it's as much as a third of the value of the pension over 25, 30 years of retirement. And so, you know, I look at it and I see it like that's similar to taking away a third of the value of someone's 401k. And just to call it a cut in the cost of living adjustment, look, this is an earned pension. This is for people who've already retired. This isn't changing the rules up on somebody just being hired or even who hasn't even retired yet. This is for somebody who's in retirement. They can't do anything to change what they already earned.
Now, let's talk about some folks who've been out of the workforce a bit longer, and there might be a couple still working in the workforce, and those are Civil Service Retirement System retirees, CSRS annuitants. They don't escape this budget proposal.
No, they don't.
The administration is proposing that their cost of living adjustment be reduced by 0.5%, a sort of Diet Cola.
Yeah, and that doesn't sound, it's not as severe as the elimination of the cost of living adjustment. But then you have to remember that for CSRS, many of these people, this is the only thing they receive in retirement, right? They didn't have TSP. If they didn't work in the private sector, they don't have a Social Security check. So this is what they're relying on. And because of that, those pensions are a little bit higher than the FERS pensions. And 0.5% of that adds up to a lot of money over time, too, hundreds of thousands of dollars as well. So
it escapes me because the cost of living adjustment should be consistent amongst all retirement programs. I mean, FERS included. I mean, FERS is not a full, right now, FERS is not a full COLA, that there is a reduction, a 1% reduction, depending on what the inflation rate is.
Right.
But here you're going to be treating CSRS retirees who have thus far been treated similar to Social Security recipients, you'll be treating them differently.
Right. Yeah, it reeks of unfairness. And to do, again, the after-the-fact part of this is really grinds my gears.
And another issue about retirement is, and it probably doesn't affect as many postal employees as it does people in the individuals in the law enforcement or the air traffic control industry, but that is the elimination of the FERS supplement. That is, it applies for those individuals who retire from the federal service under FERS prior to being old enough to receive Social Security. And that may affect some postal employees in the law enforcement, postal police and IG's office and so forth. Where does that come from?
Where is the annuity supplement or where does the cut come from?
Why? I mean, it's sort of like...
I think the reasoning for this one is that... In the creation of FERS, it was to create a similar system to CSRS, right? And so under CSRS, if you retire early, you get the full CSRS pension. And FERS, you don't get Social Security, and that's part of your retirement package. So this was to bridge that gap between when you retire early and Social Security. And then I think when we look at it, it's particularly egregious to take this out, one, for people about to retire, and then two, for people under mandatory retirement systems that are retiring earlier, that have to retire earlier. So when you're talking about law enforcement and things like that. But, it's also a big cut for anybody who's relying on it that isn't in mandatory retirement, that has those years of credit, that can retire early at age, 57. And those 5 years, it's a lot of money to lose in taking away that entire annuity supplement.
Yeah, let me go back just for a moment, just so I like people to understand the magnitude of these cuts.
Yeah.
With regard to the elimination of the cost of living adjustment for FERS and the 0.5% reduction that the president proposes, and the estimate is that would cut approximately $53.6 billion over a 10-year period out of pensions. I'm not doing the addition here about the FERS, over $80 billion, and then we have the over $53 billion. But these numbers add up.
Right.
The another issue that sort of comes back year in year like acid reflux is changing the retirement calculation from the high 3 to the high 5, which would affect all future retirees. That's significant also.
It is. And, that's another one that's just, the principle of changing somebody's retirement benefits up as they approach retirement is again violated on this one. This isn't for new hires. Not that we would support it for new hires, but you have to take a look at the overall compensation package as well. So these are one, there's a principle of unfairness of doing to somebody about to retire, and then two, the fact that it's an overall compensation cut. So you're making these jobs less competitive.
And the 10-year savings from that the administration calculates is over $8 billion over 10 years.
And I'm sure we'll add these all up at the end and get a
big
number. Oh,
yeah. It's a big number.
Yeah.
Now, the next proposal, which I'd like to sort of mention, you referenced it earlier on, and I think this is extremely punitive and unfair, and that is arbitrarily reducing the interest earned in the G Fund. Now, the G Fund invests in Treasury securities, which are a lot of folks are, I think, 40% of investments now in the Thrift Savings Plan are in the G Fund because people believe, and as they should, that it is secure, it's stable. This would destabilize the G Fund.
It would very much destabilize it. It would also destabilize some of the L funds, which are partially invested in the G Fund. And it basically takes your rate of return down close to zero. It would be a bad financial move to keep your money invested in the G Fund if this were to pass, because you're not keeping up with inflation. It does seem very punitive. I also, I, you know, whatever savings this estimates, you know, it assumes people are going to stay in the G fund, which is, you know, doubly worse, because then you're going to have people that really should be moving their money out. You're taking advantage of them and saying, oh, we're going to take this savings out of your retirement savings that, you know, should be somewhere else.
So, and the savings attributed to that for a 10-year period is around $10.5 billion.
Correct.
Now, for those who have a pencil and paper and are adding this up, you should know that these proposals that John and I have just spoken about that are directed at federal and postal employees and retirees totals to over $179 billion over a 10-year period.
Yeah.
And our economy is in great shape.
Right. And that's coming out of the pockets of, what, 5 million people? You know, so it's a lot of burden to get your balanced budget to place on the small amount of people that are public servants, just doing the jobs we ask them to do.
Yeah, one of the proposals in the president's budget that people sort of are so curious about is the administration did propose, make a recommendation with regard to the federal employees' health benefits program,
yeah,
particularly changing the way in which the government would sort of contribute the
right.
employer's share of the FEHBP premium. Could you explain what the analysis, what that's all about?
Yeah, I think there's kind of split this up into two sections. One, it reduces, right now the government pays 72% of the weighted average of plan premiums. Mm-hmm. This would take that down to 71. That right there is just a plain cut in how much the government is contributing to your health insurance premiums. You know, that's just going to shift costs from the government to the employee.
So the baseline will be that the employees will pay a higher percentage of their premium.
Right. So that's the baseline. And then there's another element of this, which is we're going to start to assess these each plan, and based on these plan assessments, we'll give more money to the ones we decide are better plans and less money to the ones who we decide are worse. And so that proposal, I don't think, has been fleshed out that well so far. And so where NARF has been, you know, we certainly oppose the straight up reduction and cost shifting part of it, and we haven't really taken a position on the other part of it because we're willing to see what people have in mind and can this actually improve health outcomes? Maybe, but I think the proposal itself is very much in its infancy and very short on detail and not really being considered by Congress either.
Yeah, and the irony to this whole thing is that the agency with some degree of expertise in running the Federal Employees Health Benefits Program, the Office of Personnel Management, the administration is proposing to eliminate the
right.
Office of Personnel Management and put FEHBP into the General Services Administration,
yeah,
which has absolutely no experience in health insurance.
No, and this was a frustrating part of the budget because the National Defense Authorization Act passed in December explicitly prohibited the administration from eliminating transferring functions over to GSA. It also it said, we're going to study this issue, see what we can do to improve OPM operations, but you have to contract with the National Academy of Public Administration. They have a year to do their study and then 180 days before until anything can be done. So it's after the end of this fiscal year that this budget is for, that there's even a possibility that they can move, yet they've still doubled down on the same proposal. It seems to me like a big waste of time to have spent putting that in the budget as opposed to focusing on ways to improve OPM outside of that proposal.
Now, one of the issues that NARF has, and we welcome NARF to this issue and to this battle, and that is to help save the Postal Service.
Mm-hmm.
And my president just came back from California, where we have the California Postal Coalition, and NARF has actively participates in these events, and we've collaborated in fighting attempts to privatize the Postal Service. The president doesn't leave the Postal Service alone in his budget. Among the recommendations, which is taken from the president's task force on the Postal Service dating back to December 2018, was to reduce mail frequency, change
yep.
where mail is delivered, opening up the mailbox to private interests,
mm-hmm.
to contract out more postal operations. They're saving somewhere in the neighborhood of $91 billion through their efforts, in addition
yep.
to sort of putting their thumb on the scale with regard to postal rates for competitive
yeah.
products.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know what they're doing. I think it runs counter to what what Congress is looking at with the passage of the USPS Fairness Act. I think it runs counter to things that I think the postal community, both NARF and you know, NAPS, would oppose in terms of privatization, in terms of, you know, reducing mail delivery, reducing service standards, and all that. So I think hopefully that's another one that's dead on arrival.
Great. One of the wins that the federal postal, the federal community had this past year was the adoption of prepaid parental leave, 12 weeks of prepaid parental leave for federal employees. That bill did not include postal employees as well. Does NARF have a view on that?
A view on?
On the exclusion of postal employees. I was just.
NARF thinks it should be, you know, extended to anybody who should have it. I think with regard to, so certainly would support inclusion of postal employees in that paid parental leave. You know, in terms of how that went down, in terms of its inclusion, I didn't get the sense there was a big push to add postal employees. I think part of that is due to the, you know, it's something that can be collectively bargained over for the employees. I don't know if that applies to the, to NAPS, though.
No, we don't collectively bargain. So that's an interest to us. So we'll be looking for your help.
So, yeah, and there are bills out there for technical corrections for some other federal, for some other groups of federal employees that were left out. So NARF has been pushing this as a government-wide thing, and we don't, we think everybody should be included. We don't think anybody should be left out.
Great. Any parting words for our listeners, John?
You know, contact your members of Congress, let them know that you don't like these proposals in the budget, and, you know, make sure that we keep them dead on arrival as they are.
And the National Association of Postal Supervisors will be in Washington the second week in March for our legislative training seminar, and we're going to carry that message to Capitol Hill. With that, I want to thank John for joining us here today and to thank NARF for their support and leadership in a lot of issues that affect all of our members. With that, till next week.
I'm going to sit right down and write myself a letter and make